Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Mandroid Murders by Robin C. M. Duncan. Narrated by Audie Cabral. 000001. Departure plus 20 ESD. Earth Standard Days. 91 million kilometers from Earth. Long-haul travel was a bitch. The security checks, the data work, then 23 days in a pressurized tube. Even the drinking became tiresome after 100 million kilometers. And all the smiling. It made his face ache. Smiling at flight crew presented no hardship, but smiling at the androids went beyond the pale. Then again, an android siren might read a scowl as a sign of discontent. Undesirable on a 690 million kilometer flight from Hygieia to Mother Earth, during which discontent should be mitigated. So the laws and tenets of robotics directed humanity's android helpers. Thus, Quirk smiled at the siren steward as it served him the latest in a long line of gin and tonics. This smile, compact and efficient, he entitled, "Please don't taser me, I'm just a harmless detective." A clunky label, but it might just spare him the embarrassment of ending up sprawled, twitching on the carpet with drool on his chin. A siren would not intervene for such a small thing, of course, but a scowl may attract attention he did not want. So, Quirk sipped Vienna Woods Botanical 11 gin, refreshing tonic bubbling through paper straw, and watched the slow shifting of the stars. Earth. What constituted ambient temperature in hell these days? This may be a milk run, but the job still meant Earth, Milan, the Rigel Corporation. The family, as the archaic euphemism went, la cosa nostra. The honored society, albeit wrapped up under the corporate respectability, as far as that ever went, of the Rigel logo. He sipped again. Just a dead drop for Tony Di Fantano. Legal, apparently, easy money, and one in the eye for his former employer and father-in-law. Not that the old man likely thought of him much anymore, despite Quirk working for the old bastard for 5 years, but Quirk did. Even now, he thought plenty about what Tom and his C-Corp corporate behemoth had done to him, and to Jennifer, although she'd begged for it. Progeny delivered to your door. Skip that nasty, nappy stage. Sidestep the sleepless nights. Here's a 5-year-old son. Go straight to grade school, do not pass go. Yet Tom had overridden him. Disregarded Jennifer's mental state. Just did what the hell Tom wanted. Because that's what Tom did. And everyone else be damned. The paper straw rasped empty again. He fished out his Sea Life handset. Thumbed up last order and hit repeat. Then looked out of the window. After this, he'd take a break, put his feet up somewhere out of the way. The stars moved sideways, enveloped in darkness, emptiness. He hoped Jennifer still resided in the tender care of the Gramercy Refuge. She deserved better than life had meted out to her in the last 5 years, not least from him. And there it was, analysis confirmed. Walking out on Jennifer and the son, Nick? Still the best thing he'd ever done for them. And for himself. Enter the siren with his next G&T. Quirk raised the glass to the android. Thank you, my man. Did it just roll those violet eyes? Nothing would surprise him now. 0554, 4 August 2099. Geostation 1. 58,000 kilometers above Cayambe, Ecuador, Earth. Once again, the 3-week trip from Hygieia to Geostation 1, dangling forlorn from Earth's west space elevator, resembled passing through a whale's colon, tight and hot without hope of a happier place at the end. None of the shuttle's 8 passengers looked on their best form. Gray jumpsuits rumpled, clumping down the pastel pink link tunnel to the transit hub, grippy mag boots lending their strides that familiar straight-legged awkwardness. At least Quirk's pinstriped Marion suit lay safely folded in its bespoke case. An affectation in places like this, but it remained important, sartorially and symbolically. And it would serve him well in Geo-1's sole cocktail bar this evening, or whatever current Earth hour it was, plus a shower and a shave. He sorely wished not to be returning to the concourse tomorrow to start the tedious trip down in the space elevator, followed by a flight to his ultimate destination. He scanned his sea life at the security station, then followed the device's directions to his pre-booked pod room, strolling in the wake of the other passengers, who dispersed through the low-ceilinged concourse like debris from the epicenter of a lazy explosion. In this space, pastel green light illuminated the plastic surfaces. He passed a young father wrangling a pair of kids. The family's male model siren held their bags, looking on with impassive violet eyes at the young man's agitation. The universe really was taking the piss now, wasn't it? He wondered for the nth time where N was a variable proportional to the number of GNTs he'd consumed in the last 3 weeks, about visiting Jennifer after the Milan drop was done. But how could he face his ex-wife when he only barely managed to look at his own reflection in the morning? Bad idea. And no chance reminder of the trappings of familial bliss would change that. Anyway, news of a visit would reach the old man, who no doubt would relish turning away from his interstellar corporate empire long enough to divert a healthy dose of misery Quirk's way. Even without Tom learning he'd done a favor for Tom's rival, the capo di tutti capi of the Rigel Corporation. This place really was a hole. A claustrophobic carbuncle on the glistening oblate sphere of Earth. But Geostation 1 did have a saving grace. Its bio showers. Once his luggage arrived and the android departed, Quirk commenced soaking under the rainforest deluge setting. Water optimized to his skin type, body temperature, etc. Nature sounds tuned to his brainwaves for a full half hour. Unspooling relaxation gave his thoughts freedom to roam, time to stroll down memory lane, beyond the ache of what he still considered Jennifer's betrayal of him and Tom's betrayal of her. The job at C-Corps started like a dream and, true to form, remained all sweetness and light until it didn't. Go to Bogota. All you need to do is fly the plane. Shanghai? Just collect the package. You don't need to know what's in it. Customs? You'll be taking a different route. How long had he sought the disconnect, the window he could leap from to disentangle himself from C-Corps, the old man, even Jennifer? Too long. Long enough for a deadly showdown between CC and the Rigel Corporation to happen along. Long enough for Quirk to step into the middle of it up to his ankles, to have his life saved by a gangster, and to end up owing Tony the Fantano a favor. He only hoped this would work out better than his bright idea at C-Corps, marrying the boss's daughter. At least he'd maintained his independence these past 5 years. Tony clearly valued that. Organizational flexibility, he called it. Whatever the label, this time Quirk was done. No more favors. Soaked, soaped, air blown dry, and thoroughly refreshed, Quirk opted for the hypoallergenic antiperspirant top coat, which also imparted a slight darkening to his skin. It wouldn't do to pitch up all pasty-faced in Milan. Far better to blend in as best he could when on business for Rigel. But just because he had a dubious job to do, there was no law against looking good doing it. Stepping from the bio shower, yet another screen caught his eye. A postage stamp advert playing in the corner of the room's mirror screen. A happy family went about buying some new possession. He scowled, looked away, waved a hand to dismiss the intrusion. I get the message. Families are nice. Go get one today. He drew a deep breath, seeking calm, then opened his case. Pants, socks, shirt, tie, the suit trousers and buckling of his black leather belt, then his slightly too narrow Lingwood shoes. He took a full minute before the mirror screen, then picked up the pinstriped indigo jacket, brushed lightly at imaginary lint, and swung it around his shoulders. His hands slipped through the cream-colored silk lining, still cool from the airless hold. The mirror image was pleasing. He nodded. Jennifer, you absolute bitch. As if nothing had happened those 5 years ago in San Francisco, nor in Milan in the 5 years since, he was alone. He was complete. 000010. 10:33. 11 August 2099. Biella Spaceport, Italy. Earth. 7 days and 71,000 kilometers later, Quirk strolled through the vast, airy arches of the Biella Spaceport, where everything from glacial, echoing marble floor to soaring dandelion steelwork shone white. He hopped onto the turbine train, which whisked him out of Piedmont into Lombardy, depositing him in Milan inside 25 minutes. Most of those minutes he spent staring out of the window, drinking in the agricultural scenery. None of the expansion worlds with their environmentally optimized agri-cities could lay claim to the chaotic, dirty charm of Earth, a landscape forged from thousands of years of human conflict, greed, sweat, and excrement. The steward brought him an espresso and a tiny biscotto. Quirk watched the young man's firm, uniformed arse departing through the carriage and smiled, sipping bitter joy from the little cup. When the turbine came to rest, Quirk stood smartly, tucking his sea life into the top pocket of his suit jacket. Connected life. All the apps you need, installed by pseudo-AI before you know you need them. Wonderful. When had personal communications become never being alone? Part of him loathed it, but he and that part didn't speak much anymore. He patted his trouser pockets, then the breast of his dark suit with olive-green pinstripe, concerned the manila envelope's hard corners would spoil the lines of his couture. But, as he'd established already, the fabric's weight disguised the consignment. His lips twitched. Ultimate wealth made the world conform to your needs. So Tom had proven more times than Quirk could count. And so he'd spent 3 damn weeks traveling from the belt to enact an antediluvian ritual unknown in his ever-expanding experience of investigation and detection. Ridiculous. But if Anthony DeFantino wanted a dead drop in his birthplace and seat of his interstellar, probably criminal, empire, he got it. In part because he paid for it. In part because disappointing Tony was not a healthy lifestyle choice. He snorted and headed for the door. He became aware of the tail immediately upon stepping out onto the crowded platform. Auto-leveling station platforms had long since made stepping down a thing of the past. A nagging discomfort tickled the nape of his neck. That neurological niggle that said someone appraised his every move. Quirk disdained the idea of implants, or even a detection app to warn him of unwanted attention. He relied on good old-fashioned instinct. Little gray cells, deductive reasoning, a detective's how-to book, or sheer dumb luck. Whatever the mechanism, he knew someone was following him, and he didn't need a posse of peripheral micro-drones to tell him. His old-school approach meant he was wrong about 27.9% of the time, but not this time, because the blonde tracking him made no attempt to hide it. Quirk produced his sea life, sent his luggage to the hotel via premium siren service, then held the slim device higher, tapped off anti-reflection, and used the sharp, grease-resistant surface to watch the watcher. A handsome individual, male-presenting, although the more Quirk looked, the less sure he was. Suited like him, confident, unworried, unhurried gait like him. He looked right at Quirk, wanting him to know he knew Quirk knew he was being followed. Perhaps a suit from Tony to ensure nothing went amiss. Possibly a rival chapter of La Familia, sticking its noble aquiline naso into Tony's affairs. Whatever the case, he would play the game. He shrugged. stowed his sea life and kept walking, moving at the crowd's pace. He endured the metro, slowing a little on boarding to ensure his tail made the train, then stood by the doors so he could beat the huddled masses to the stairs. Emerging from the shockingly grimy tunnel of cracked ceramic tiles, the first overt sign of Milan's relative poverty, Quirk forged up dusty metal steps into Piazza del Duomo. Met by hot sunlight, in open air at last, he moved aside and stared upwards into the azure sky. Across the square, Milan's epic cathedral towered, a glorious Gothic wonder, every one of its numerous spires topped with a statue, which also littered its walls, its nooks, and its niches. A legion of statues. An angel in every angle. He smiled at his own bon mot. Small wonder construction of this magnificent building took nearly 600 years. In his opinion, the Sagrada Familia seemed a gaudy marquee by comparison. And the faithful of earth and of the heavens, where man roams in the footsteps of God, still come here to recharge their faith. The words used to mean something to him. At least he had the memory of that. He would visit the cool, dark interior after completing his task. But business first, always business first. He must get rid of this bloody envelope. Seeing his tail had emerged from the stairs, Quirk moved away from the entrance and the increasingly crowded footway, stepping out into traffic. The autonomous, pseudo-AI-driven vehicles slowed or stopped to avoid hitting him. Sure, he might receive a fine for jaywalking, applied by the ubiquitous cameras and sent straight to a sea life for his convenience, but it would keep Beatrix Potter, as he named his tail, because androgyny, and because he loved to overcomplicate things, on his toes, and he might even get a ticket himself, causing some awkwardness, Quirk hoped. All very amusing, but he would have to deal with this chap before approaching the drop site, and what better place to do that than the middle of the piazza? Thus, leaving the polite pinging and bonging of car horns behind him, he strolled out into the square. Even this early, a sprinkling of tourists inhabited the piazza, necks craned upwards. But most of those crossing the square were well-heeled Milanese making their way to the market. Even though most likely visited the Galleria to buy food, they looked fabulous to a signore and signora. However, their fashion was new, handmade by robots. Even after the demise of Europe as a political entity under a biblical deluge of refugees, and Italy's consequent subsummation, along with Greece and Turkey, into the North African bloc, Italians still dressed to impress, still flirted and drank coffee, still played football with passion and no little hint of skullduggery. And so the great temples of Italian culture endured. La Scala endured. The San Siro endured. Yet Milan presented a faded image of greatness. The Galleria Vittorio Emanuele, for example, the oldest shopping mall in human history, twin four-story, plass-vaulted arcades meeting at a towering octagonal plass dome, intricate mosaic floors echoing the staccato tramp of the best Plaztec shoes dollars could buy, now housed a glorified farmer's market, and only the super-rich bought clothes made by actual human hands. Quirk touched the Marion's sleeve. The truly discerning person about town bought pre-owned clothing, because they really didn't make it like that anymore. Pre-owned was classical. It had provenance. In his book, it marked out those in the know from those in the know. He stopped in the middle of the piazza, started to raise his sea life to locate the tail in its reflection, but Beatrix actually strolled past him, towards the Galleria's entrance, stopped, and turned. Their eyes met, green versus blue. Beatrix smiled right at him. Now, Quirk reassessed them. What pronouns do you prefer?
And buona giornata to you, Quirk,
said Beatrix, clearly younger than him, and the blonde hair was bleached.
Zizim ziz, please, and I know why you're here.
Beatrix wasn't far from the mark then.
Who is Beatrix?
Z looked genuinely perplexed.
Why, you are. The ex? Never mind, said Quirk, glad to have wrong-footed Zim, even if only slightly.
So, how can I help you and get on with my day?
Beatrix stepped closer, inside a meter. Quirk smelled bergamot and cinnamon.
L'eau d'homme.
Only the French could make man water sound like something you would splash on your face.
I don't work for DeFantino or his Rigel Corporation, Beatrix said casually, soft Mediterranean features defaulting to an easy smile.
Not today. So maybe he'll mind you being seen with me in public. But you'll need to tell him yourself, because he won't learn it from the tales he put on you.
Quirk nodded, acutely aware of the envelope's corner scratching his right pectoral.
So, what's your point? Is this a stick-up?
No.
Beatrix smiled, removed a hand from Ziz's pocket, and patted Quirk's chest where the envelope hid.
This is a long game, Signor Quentin Kirby. When we next meet, it may be a stick-up. Today I have a watching brief, but another day, a week, a month, a year, someone will pay me to kill you. And I'll do it. For a discount, too. And I'll do it slowly, in some unconventional way. And I'll enjoy it.
Geez, I presume I trod on your hamster at some point in the past.
Beatrix leaned in close and Quirk relaxed, ready, then gripped Beatrix's arm, found the limb within the unimpressive suit corded with muscle, possessing a strength that likely could overcome his.
Z's mouth moved to Quirk's ear, then Z kissed him on the neck.
Don't worry, Quirk. This isn't your time. You get to finish this story, unless someone else gets you first. Although, that would make me very unhappy.
Beatrix stuck Ziz's hand back in Ziz's pocket and sauntered away across the piazza. Quirk watched Ziz's back receding towards the bestatued edifice of the cathedral, while Milanese natives wandered through the increasing gap between them. His forehead was damp. A cryptic warning. Oh, good. And before breakfast, too.
At least he was not so naive as to think that Beatrix's assertion ruled out them being one of Tony's henchfolk just trying to psych him out, force a mistake. But who Z was must wait. He looked around as casually as one could after one's life was threatened in the middle of a grand piazza. Nothing more to see. No gormless goons queuing up to ruffle his suit. And if Beatrix had silenced one or more of Tony's soldiers, the capo would know by now.
Quirk tugged his lapels and aimed to effect a stroll towards the imposing entrance of the Galleria Vittorio Emanuele. He walked through the open gates under the tall arch, still dwelling on the words of his one-person reception committee. This should have been easy. Still could be. But now he was on edge. Yet he mustn't appear that way, and so he invoked half-smile of condescension, raising his finely honed chin just a fraction, and strolled down the center of the arcade, resisting the urge to fidget with his pockets. He scanned the bustle and press of people, taking a lungful of the earthy scent of fresh vegetables and sweat, an aroma only honest toil produced. The traders went at full tilt, calling their harvest from beneath the gold-on-black sigils of the fallen gods of retail, packaging produce under the logos of long-gone brands that no one under the age of 30 understood. Traders had long since cannibalized the fine fittings of the once boutiques and ex-empori to install wooden shelving and chipboard trays, while others used trestle tables and ancient plaztec to present their wares. Versace's cracked banner stared out, oblivious. Scratched Gucci remained unmoved. Prada's standard hung on its last legs. McDee's remained among the few to survive time's predations. Somehow, they always had meat. Quirk's destination in sight, marked by its glistening double arch, he slowed, paying close yet casual attention to the people around him. Coiffed and painted ladies chattered, clutching the latest mass-produced designer shopping bag to their side. Their husbands, just as beautiful, at least in their own minds, jerked their heads at friends, looked down their noses at the few tourists who'd strayed in so early to strain their necks admiring the glass roof or the patterned floor. The increasing swell of bodies began to nag. Quirk's lips twitched, and his half-smile gave in to gravity. He moved to the side of the octagon beneath the dome and stepped into McDee's.
"Can I seat you, sir?"
The young woman beamed, pouring out long-suffering bonhomie from behind the leather-bound menu she clutched to her chest. That smile could only be genuine. He struggled not to return it.
"Table for one, grazie."
"Certamente, signore."
The restaurant seemed quiet. She led him to a seat by the window and placed the menu before him.
"With something to drink?"
"Water, please." He glanced down at the menu.
"The Maggiore triple-filtered."
She nodded, started to turn away, then stopped. Her natural, open expression took on a shy cast.
"Excuse me, but I love your suit. Is it Brioni?"
"Marion. A bit of an antique, but well cared for." A good tip is in order. Reassuring to meet someone who appreciates fine things. As he waited, Quirk congratulated himself. He had accepted the server's compliment with an open mind and responded in a reasonable, almost friendly way. It had been 10 days since his last attack of cynicism. He snorted. "The recovery continues." The girl returned with his water and a ZR code, which Quirk scanned, adding half to the water's already significant cost. She smiled appreciatively and withdrew. Quirk savored the cool smoothness of natural fell-from-the-sky water for the first time in too many months. With a free moment, he checked his messages. He'd need a new case once he finished with Tony's whim. Because you never knew where the next job might come from, Quirk set his spam filter to light. He actually had been employed by a Nigerian general once, but not a rich one, unfortunately. He had no immediate need for genuine moon meds, beachfront property in Kyrgyzstan, or a Canadian mail-order bride. Of actual potential, 3 missing persons, yawn, these usually preferred to remain missing, a missing dog, oof, and 4 more courier jobs, zzzz. But a big red flashing, "Read this right fucking now!" flag drew his attention to a message from Peters, Paulson, and Frank, attorneys at law. "Mr. Quirk, we act for a client in the field of scientific research. In the pursuit of a development in an important and prevalent area, they have encountered a difficulty that must be handled with the utmost sensitivity. The matter will involve the authorities, but resolution cannot wholly be trusted to them. If this assignment interests you, please contact our office on a suitably encrypted channel, 16M or higher, within 6 hours. Yours respectfully and with regards, David Paulson, MA, LLB, DIP LP, PPF Legal, 45/2, Mikhail Gorbachev Prospect, Ruskie Quadrant, Lunagorod, Luna, SEM-1-2-10.1. He wondered what kind of regards. Still, interesting and off-world, but without an extended journey in a big plastic tube. It sounded lucrative. Big tech had all the money in the world. Might even dissuade Beatrix, too, if that really was a thing. He dashed off a holding message. "Very interested in your client's case, blah. Will respond on specifics, ASAP, yada. To confirm details, finalize arrangements, etc., etc. YF, Quirk." He had only just stowed his sea life when it twitched once, twice, 3 times. 11:58. He smoothed a hand over his stubble. Still positive a beard would look good on him, differentiate him from the Quirk in those old pictures. Lowering his hand, he palmed the envelope from his breast pocket and stood, patting his trousers. As he walked out of the restaurant, he slipped the envelope into the waste bin. Job done. Really? So easily? Yes, at the point of delivery, but the hugely time-consuming and costly complexity of Tony's demand still grated. He shook his head.
consigning the task of re-examining the details to his subconscious. And
sample complete. Ready to continue?